Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. I'm going to start off with an episode from the saga I Love a Mystery. It's Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge, Episode 7.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery.
O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second-story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling with a silent relentlessness that gives the feeling of going on forever. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man. He is the fourth man Gale Stark has kissed in the last month, and who has died violently within 24 hours afterwards. Gale kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday, and last night P.O., the caretaker, found him stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. He was just an old friend of Gale's, and had no business way off the beaten track up here near the hunting lodge. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find out why the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gale knows. And then there's another disturbing event. As a matter of fact, three other disturbing events. One, someone has cut the phone connection with the outside world and has smashed all the radios in the lodge. Two, Bruce Garrett was caught in the act of trying to strangle Gale. Garrett and Gale are engaged, and neither would give any explanation. Three, Mansfield, the venerable butler of the Stark household, has vanished. This is ominous, because Mansfield had promised to tell Jack and Doc a bloody tale of viciousness and desperation the first moment he could slip away to their rooms. But he has disappeared before he could talk. The lodge was ransacked, and the men even poked around outside in the drifts, but in the snow and utter darkness it was an impossible search. It was so late by now Jack sent everyone to bed while he and Doc took turns patrolling the upper hall. Thus everyone was under their eyes except P.O., the caretaker, and Jones, the new butler, who slept in the servant quarters behind the kitchen. And now, at 8 o'clock in the morning...
Jack? Jack, wake up.
Come
on, son, up and at him.
Huh? What's that? What's the matter?
Nothing. You told me you wanted to be woke up at 8 a.m. sharp, so it's 8 a.m.
Oh. Anything happened while I've been asleep?
Nope. Everybody's been asleep in the sleep of the dead, seems like. I've been down and routed out P.O. and the new butler, Jones. They just slapping some coffee together so we can start our day out right.
Good.
That bird Jones knows his butlin', I reckon. Anyway, he was right down to work in the kitchen like he knowed what he was doing.
He's the real thing, you think?
Sure, so does P.O. He said, "Son of my gun, Señor Jones, you sure are one fine butler, for my goodness sakes."
Uh-huh. How's the weather out?
What weather? Except for snow and more snow, there ain't any.
It's still snowing?
Like it was never going to stop, and the blame stuff's drifted right up under the bedroom windows during the night.
Up to the second story?
I'm a blue and gold hippopotamus if it ain't. Stir that carcass of yours out from under the covers, and you can see for yourself.
Uh-huh. Look, while I'm taking a shower and getting into some clothes, do a job for me, will you?
It's according. What is it?
Go around and knock on all the bedroom doors and get people up.
Huh? What's the hurry?
We're investigating a murder, and I want to find Mansfield.
Okay, but son, folks, he's gonna hate you. Nobody's had more than about 5 hours of sleep.
Go on, and then hurry back. And tell Jerry to snap into something and come here. I want to talk to you two before we tackle the rest.
Okay.
Oh, and one other thing. Be sure that everyone is wide awake before you leave his door. Talk to him a minute.
Through the door, of course.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend walking into anyone's bedroom. And especially keep an eye on our lodger for the night, A.J. Ben.
Yeah, leave it to me. And you'd better snap into it on account of me and Jerry will be back in no time.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Jerry first, I guess.
Hey, what's going on out there?
Hi, Sugarfoot. It's Doc.
Oh, yeah? I thought it was some doggone woodpecker planting acorns for the winter.
They ain't any acorns this time of year. Can I open the door, Crack?
Well, wait till I pull the covers up to my chin.
Oh, shucks.
Okay, open up. Well, fancy meeting you here, sonny boy.
Hey, cute stuff.
Me, my nose? That's all you can see of me.
No, your hair spread out on the pillow. I always wonder how a girl slept all night and woke up with her hair all combed and beautiful.
Who said she did?
In moving pictures.
Well, that was in pictures. Brother, I've been so tangled up in my hair some nights, I've felt like a mermaid caught in a sardine net.
Trapped like a rat, huh?
No kidding.
How'd you ever get out?
Now, hey, look. Did you come to my door at this time in the morning to exchange wit and humor?
Maybe not, but a little of it don't hurt.
Well, I don't feel very bright until I've had my coffee, so talk fast and then close the door.
Jack wants you to whip into something and come to our rooms for a confab.
Well, have I got time to do 1, 2, 3, 4 on the carpet and brush my teeth?
Yeah, he's taking a shower, but keep moving. I'll pick you up on my way back.
Back from where?
I'm waking everybody up. Ain't that a nice job?
Oh, you can have it.
Yeah, step on it. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Next is Jay Irvin himself. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. Stark, hello. It's Doc Long.
Ah, oh, come in. Come in, Long.
Okay. Hey, you're up and dressed already.
Yes, of course.
But after the night we had last night...
No matter what time I retire, I'm always up and ready to go down by 8 o'clock.
Well, that's what you call habit, I reckon.
Well, I don't know what else you could call it. You wish to see me about something?
Yeah, just that Jack wants me to get everybody up so we can get into this business of young Ogden's murder and Mansfield's disappearance again.
I'm frightfully upset about Mansfield. I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, we better leave that till we all get together. Oh, yeah, I went down and got Pio and the new butler to fix him some coffee.
Good. I'll go down and see what they can do about breakfast.
Good idea. This Jones feller seems to be all right.
Well, I wish I knew who sent him and why.
Just like Bruce Carrot said last night, somebody seemed to know Mansfield was going to disappear, and he was getting ready for it.
Bruce Garrett said that?
He sure did.
I don't understand, Bruce. He isn't the same man at all anymore. Well, I'll go down about breakfast.
Let's see. On the other side of the hall comes Gail's room. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
It's Doc Long, Miss Stark.
Oh, just a minute.
Hey, you didn't need to hop out of bed. I just wanted to tell you, just wanted. Miss Stark, that there's the prettiest doggone bathrobe I just about ever seen.
Bathrobe? Doc, this is a negligee.
It is, huh? Well, honey, when I get married, my sugars are going to wear one of them things all the time.
Oh, Doc, you're wonderful. 10 minutes ago, I thought I'd never laugh again, and here I am. What is it you really came to say?
Jack sent me around to wake everybody up.
Anything more happen?
He just wants everybody around so we can talk to him. Hey, how come you was awake? Don't tell me you got a habit of getting up at this hour every a.m.
No, I've just been too upset to sleep soundly, I guess.
Your throat hurt?
What? Why do you say that?
I mean where that wonderful He-Man you're supposed to marry got his claws into your last night.
I'd rather not discuss Bruce Garrett so early in the morning. What made you think of it?
Why shouldn't I think of it? You got black and blue and orange and green marks on your throat till a person would think you was spoiling.
Really? My throat hadn't hurt much. I hadn't thought to look in the mirror.
Take a look. You'd be interested. I've seen toadstools and damp woods the color of your neck.
Ew, I look horrible.
Yeah, I'd wear a scarf or something around my neck if you didn't want to spoil folks' appetites.
To think that the man I was supposed to marry would do a thing like that.
Yeah, some bridegroom. Why'd he do it?
Oh, he was angry because I brought you and Mr. Packard here. And because Philip Ogden's body was found outside the lodge.
Huh. He was mad at you on account of Ogden's body being found up here?
Yes, he I was just too ugly.
Well, that's me and Jack's business, ugliness. So shoot.
Well, he was jealous. He believed Phil Ogden came up here to keep a clandestine meeting with me.
Hey, if he thought that, then it's a natural. He came up on Ogden and stabbed him in the back and left his body in a snowbank.
No, I don't think so. Look, I'm getting dreadfully cold standing here in nothing.
Hey, what am I thinking about? Get your clothes on. We can talk all about this later.
Thank you. Mansfield usually brings coffee up. Nothing new about Mansfield, is there?
Uh-uh. But about the coffee, new guy Jones is making some, and I'll see you get some.
Oh, thank you. You're the kind of gentleman I like knowing, Doc. You're sweet. Bye.
Well, I'll be doggone. Can that sweetheart put the pressure on when she tries? Mm-mm. Next comes Mr. A.J. Ben, who don't even belong here. Hey, don't do that.
Oh, it's you, Long. What's the matter?
Whipping your door open in my face like that scares living daylights out of a feller.
Oh, sorry.
And what the heck you doing up and dressed?
What's wrong with that?
Well, doggone it, Jack told me to come around and wake folks up, and so far Jerry Booker's the only one I've found asleep.
Oh, I think that would be a pretty enjoyable experience.
Huh?
Finding Miss Booker asleep?
Look, Mr. Ben, you seen Bruce Garrett get his teeth knocked in last night on account of Jerry Booker.
I did indeed.
Well, just remember it, if you please.
Oh, I most certainly will. And now what can I do for you?
Just as I said, Jack wants everybody up and round. But while I'm here, you might tell me what you done with Mansfield's body.
What I... Oh, no, you're on the wrong track.
I don't know if I am or not.
Why?
Well, in the first place, you don't act to me like no guy that just wandered in out of a storm because you were lost.
What do I act like?
Like a guy in on the know. Like a guy who came here on purpose. Like a guy who maybe busted the radios and cut the phone wire so's we couldn't be in touch with the outside.
You make me out a very interesting fellow.
And I seen you monkey in with the light in the trophy room just before the fuse plug burned out.
Let me put you right about that. Long?
Huh?
If you can burn out a fuse plug by screwing a bulb in and out of the socket as I was doing last night, well, it can't be done. Try it yourself.
That's a good story.
It's the truth. Somebody turned out the lights at the fuse box down in the basement.
Why?
I don't know why.
All right, then. Who?
Well, it would have to be someone free to do it. Mr. Stark and Gail Stark were supposed to be in their rooms upstairs. They could have slipped down and done it. Or Bruce Garrett. I understand Mr. Packard had let him go just a few minutes before. Or maybe it was P.O. when he went after more wood. Well, for all I know, there's a stranger in the lodge.
You're doggone right there is, and you're him.
You still stick to me, do you?
Didn't you whip out of the trophy room and follow Mansfield down into the basement?
And get myself hit over the head for my trouble?
That's your story. Jack said you didn't have a mark on you.
Very well. If you insist on me being the villain, I'll put on a Hindenburg mustache and a monocle and start to sneer.
Oh, wise guy, huh? I think one of the things we're going to do after breakfast is take you apart and find out what makes y'all tick.
Bitter men have tried, my boy.
And I think you're going to tell us just exactly what you're doing here, too.
Oh, you think that, do you?
That's what I said.
Well, well. Pardon me while I go down and sustain myself with a cup of coffee.
Just a minute.
Your hand off my arm, please. Thank you. No hard feelings, of course.
The heck they ain't. Well... All I got left is Brother Bruce. Wonder how he's feeling this morning. Garrett seems to be a sound sleeper. Now, ain't this interesting? Better look into this. Yep, it's open. Well, I'll be doggone. Hey, Garrett, didn't you hear me a-knocking? Laying there in bed. Garrett, what's the matter with you?
Get out of here.
Now look, sport.
Get out of my room before I shoot you dead in your tracks.
You mean you got a gun in your bed there with you?
I have.
That'd be murder, though, fella, shooting a guy in cold blood.
No clown of a detective's gonna invade the privacy of my quarters. Now get out!
Okay, but I would like to get a glimpse of that shooting iron you keep talking about.
If I show it to you, get back.
So, Daisy!
Stop it, you fool!
That's how they spill guys out of bed in the army, and I don't see no gun neither.
If you think you can manhandle me?
Manhandled Gail Stark, didn't you? Now get up on your feet.
I'll have you behind bars for criminal assault.
Oh, hush your face. On your feet!
Take your hands off of me!
Get your clothes on and stop telling me the terrible things you're gonna do to me.
Listen, you listen to me. I'm gonna...
Hey.
I'm gonna...
You are a little crazy at that, aren't you?
Will people stop saying I'm crazy? I'm not. I'm not, I tell you.
Oh, no, no, please.
We found him.
Hello.
We found him.
Everybody come quick. Where is everybody?
Hey, something's the matter. I better get going. Something's busted loose downstairs.
Golly!
Hey, what's going on?
Mansfield. Mansfield, they did this to you.
Huh? They found Mansfield? Hey, he's been stabbed to death.
See? Jones, she find him in snow outdoors.
Doggone, stabbed in the heart and froze stiff.
See, senor? This makes two frozen corpses for the lodge this winter.
Forgive me, Mansfield. Forgive me.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton C. Morse. This was Book 25, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge, directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Reynaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Welt. Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast on May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Next up is a recreation from Ethel and Albert. Albert's driver's license.
CBS Radio presents The Private Life of Ethel and Albert, written by Peg Lynch, and starring Esther Geddes McVeigh and David Van Meter. Ethel and Albert seem to live a quite ordinary life. They have the same little problems we all do, but every now and then something happens which changes the routine of their everyday life. Right now, Ethel is in the living room clearing out the desk drawers, and Albert has just come in the kitchen door.
Albert, is that you? Albert?
Yeah?
Good heavens. What are you doing home so early? Why are you home so early? Something wrong? You're sick.
No, I'm not sick.
Had an accident? Lost your job? I didn't even hear the car drive in. You are sick.
No, I'm not sick.
I'll get you something to eat.
I'm not hungry.
A bowl of soup. Sandwich. What kind of a sandwich would you like? Or would you rather have a hamburger? No, maybe just tea and toast would be better.
Ethel.
Tea and toast.
For Pete's sakes, you're going to be just like my mother. First thing, she tries to jam some food into you. If you're upset, you don't feel like eating.
All right, all right. You're not sick. You're upset.
I'll be all right. Just...
I want to know what's wrong. Honestly, if you ask a woman what's wrong, she says, "Oh, let me tell you." But with a man, it's like pulling teeth to get anything out of him. Why are you upset? You might as well tell me. You know you're going to tell me anyway. What is it, honey? What's the trouble?
Well, remember I couldn't find my wallet this morning?
Yes, yes. I looked for it all day. I couldn't find it.
Wasn't at the office either.
Did you make a list of your credit cards?
Yes, yes. But I needed my driver's license. So I went over to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. They looked up my records, and it seems my driver's license has expired anyway. They said they sent me a notice.
I never saw any notice. Don't look at me. I've been very careful about this ever since the mail that I threw away had your income tax thing in it. So, wouldn't they give you a new driver's license, dear?
They said I had to take the driver's test.
Oh, what a nuisance. No wonder you're annoyed. Well, you'll take it and pass it with flying colors.
I took it. I didn't pass it.
You? Oh, Albert. You're kidding. You flunked the driver's test?
I have been driving for years. Years!
Flunked the test? I can't believe it.
This is the first time in my married life I felt like divorcing you.
I'm sorry. I am. I'm very sorry.
I have been driving since I was 16 and never had an accident.
I know. That's why I can't believe it. You of all people. But you know, dear, you do sort of jump the gun at stoplights.
I do not jump the gun at stoplights, as you put it.
And you kind of shoot around corners too fast. And when you're turning, you don't always put on your lights soon enough. How did you happen to get to take the driver's test so quickly?
One of the driving inspectors was just sitting there. He said, I'll be happy to accommodate you. You know how driving inspectors are? They're so grumpy, never smiling.
Well, they've got their problems, too. All day long, they're taking out new drivers, nervous and in a panic. At any minute, one of them could scream, take her hands off the wheel and cover her eyes, and the driving inspector could be a dead duck.
Why are you sticking up for the driving inspector?
Well, I'm not. I just... Go on. So what happened?
Okay, he asked me to pull up beside a space hardly big enough for a kiddie car. And he barked out, here, parallel park.
Well, you're wonderful at that. Didn't you make it?
No. Well, yes, finally. He took me about 3 times. I backed in and out, went forward, barely missing the front car. Then I backed and hit this back car. Didn't do any damage. But this inspector just sat there, arms folded, and finally said, oh, forget it. Drive on. Just at that point, I made it.
Oh, well, honey, you were nervous and upset, as well you might be.
Just the same, for a guy who has never even had a ticket.
Well, there was... Oh, never mind.
What? When did I ever get a ticket?
No. No.
When did I ever get a ticket?
For speeding? The speed limit was 55 on the turnpike, and you were doing 80. And I said, better slow down, but on our way home from your mother's about 6 years ago, remember?
Once. That's the only time.
The trip we went east, Boston. A parking ticket. They put one of those boot things on your wheel, and we had to go way off somewhere in the outskirts of town. Some way out of Boston to pick up the car. You were a raving maniac. And it cost a fortune to...
That was parking. Parking has nothing to do with driving a car.
Okay. How did you find out so quickly that you didn't pass the test?
I didn't. When we got back, I had to take the written exam. I was already uptight over this driving inspector. Turn left. Turn right. Do this. Do that. Didn't I even have time to think?
Oh, I know. These inspectors can be very intimidating.
He was really a big...
All right. So you took the written test.
Yeah, I thought I did all right. I handed it in to this woman at the desk, and while I was filling out the application for a new license, I heard her say to the driving inspector, he'll have to take it over again.
Oh, well, maybe they were talking about somebody else.
Wasn't anybody else in there.
Oh. What questions did you get wrong?
I don't know. They don't tell you. The inspector handed me this driver's manual and said, better take this home and study it. Boy, I was so mad.
Well, come on, calm down.
Well, it was so humiliating.
Yes, I can see that, but it doesn't matter.
Of course it matters. I was humiliated.
Well, they don't know you. You weren't humiliated in front of anybody you know.
It's all right to be humiliated in front of strangers.
Well, you won't see them again.
I'll see them all again on Monday when I go back to take the test. Probably laugh when they see me coming, nudging each other. There's this dumb klutz who flunked everything.
Oh, now, more likely they won't even remember you at all.
Won't remember me?
Well, I just meant, why are we all so sensitive? We worry to pieces about what people think of us. Actually, they're probably not thinking about us at all.
I suppose, but I just hate going back there on Monday.
Oh, you'll be letter perfect. We'll study this driver's manual all weekend. Let me see it. Let's take a look at it right now.
Do you know that some people, no, not some, many people have told me I'm the best driver they've ever ridden with? Someone said it just last week.
Well, that was your mother. Well, now here. Let's do a few of these true or false. Are you listening?
Yes, yes.
Now pay attention. Flashing red lights mean slow down to 10 miles an hour and then proceed slowly.
True.
True?
False.
Well, which is it?
Well, you know, I've got my driver's license when I was 16. They didn't have any written exam, and I just applied for a license and I got it.
Well, you won't get one now unless you remember that flashing red lights mean stop, dead stop, then proceed with caution. You don't creep forward as you generally do, Albert, at 10 miles an hour. You stop, dead.
All right, all right.
A vehicle traveling 40 miles an hour can stop in a distance of 75 feet.
True.
False.
If I'm driving 40 miles an hour, I can certainly stop within 75 feet.
Nope. It takes 120 feet to stop if you have four-wheel brakes. If you have two-wheel brakes, it takes 180 feet. And also, I want to tell you that you can say to yourself, four-wheel, 120, two-wheel, 180. Maybe if you keep saying that over and over and over.
I'm not going to keep saying it over and over. I'm not going to say it at all. It is outrageous. Outrageous that anybody who has been driving as long as I have.
If you flunk your driver's test three times, you'll have to take driving lessons.
Who says so?
The manual says so. Right here, right at the top of the page, big letters. Here.
Go on.
True or false? Always look in the rear view mirror and give the proper signal before making a turn. Always look in the rear view mirror and give a...
True.
Very good, dear. That was very good. You got it right.
Thank you.
Next one. Headlights must show an object the size of a man 625 feet ahead of your car.
That's right. True.
That's wrong. False. Well, it's what the book says. Do you want to argue?
No, I'm tired of this.
Well, stick with it for a few minutes. Here's another. When changing lanes, you should check traffic by looking over your shoulder.
That's false.
No. That's true.
You don't look over your shoulder for Pete's sake. You check the rear view mirror and the side mirror.
Yes, but at the last second, you take a quick look over your shoulder just to make sure you're not turning into an oncoming car. Yes, dear. You turn and look.
Which side? Which side? You're talking about right or left.
Well, either one or both. You do it. It's instinctive. You're not thinking, dear.
I'm pretty tired of this whole thing.
Hold on. We'll do something different. Here, now, this sounds like fun. It's signs. See? See if you recognize them. What is the traffic sign that is the shape of an octagon? Octagon has eight sides.
I know what it is.
Well, what does the sign say? Now think. You see it at least 20 times on the way uptown. Octagon shaped. It says stop. It's a stop sign.
All right, all right. I didn't know what you were meant. I never think what shape the signs are.
Here's another. What does a round sign say? A round one. Round. Round like a circle.
I know a circle is round.
Oh, sorry. Well, what does a round sign say? I'll give you a clue. I think I can.
What are you doing?
I'm giving you a clue. I think I can.
A railroad.
I think I can. Toot, toot.
Train.
Yes. But what does the sign say?
Crossing? Railroad crossing?
Oh, very good, dear. But they're not going to be giving you a clue at the license bureau. I don't think the driving inspector is going to pretend he's the little engine that could.
I know. I just feel as though I'd been kicked in the stomach. I've always felt I was a good driver, a careful driver, a conscientious driver, and now this.
I know, dear, but, well, don't worry. We'll both study the driver's manual over the weekend, so you'll be letter perfect by Monday when you take the test again. Come on now, cheer up. Let's see a smile.
Not much to smile about.
You got me.
Yes, I do indeed, sweetheart. Thank heaven I've got you. I'm sorry I've been so grumpy. It's just all so infuriating.
Well, I'm sure it is. How long since you've taken a driver's test?
Years. Since I first started driving, I think.
Well, times change. Remember when we used to dangle our hands out the window to indicate which way we were turning?
Yes.
Oh, I have some good news. Your sports jacket came today. It looks wonderful.
Oh, great.
I thought that would perk you up. You can wear it tonight.
Yeah, great. Tonight? What's tonight?
What's tonight? Taking your boss and his wife out to dinner.
Oh, yes.
I made reservations at the Hiawatha Inn. We're picking them up.
Picking them up?
Well, I thought we should. We're taking them out to dinner.
Well, why don't we meet them there? It'd be easier if they took their own car.
Oh, no, it wouldn't. They're on Maple Drive. It's right on the way. Look, it's all set. I called Alice Bradley and I said, we'll pick you up at 7 o'clock. And she said, fine. Wonderful. She said, I hate it when Fred drives at night. He can't see anything and he won't admit it. I thought it was kind of funny she'd say that to me.
I don't have my car. I had to leave it at the license bureau. I had to come home in a taxi.
Well, we'll take my car. Just had it washed.
Maybe it'd be better if we postponed dinner for a week.
Are you crazy? We postponed it for a year now. I have felt terrible about it. Now we finally got around to inviting them. Why do you want to postpone it?
I can't drive tonight. That's why.
Oh, all right. Right. Well, I can drive.
Well, I should drive. I've got a special permit to take the driver's test. But they've got some new rules. Not even a learner's permit if you flunk the test until you pass.
Oh, well, don't think about it. I'll drive. Now, let's...
Well, look.
You don't want me to drive? Is that it?
Well, you know.
No, I don't know.
I just think I should drive, that's all.
Why?
Well, it looks better.
What looks better? You look better sitting behind the wheel than I do? Albert, let's get to the bottom of this.
Bottom of what?
You know perfectly well. Why do you always drive whenever we go anywhere? To the movies, to the store, out to dinner, a trip to visit someone. You always manage to get into the driver's seat before I can get out to the car.
Oh, it just happens. Just warming up the car for you.
In the summertime? No, it doesn't just happen. Not once in our whole married life have you ever said to me, would you like to drive?
You've driven me to work, many times.
Well, that's only when you're late and you're screaming, get the car out, get the car out, and then you come tearing out, jumping into the car like Dagwood, so you can jump out again when we get to your office and you don't have to park.
Okay.
Well, I just want to know why it looks better if you drive.
The man has always done the driving, always.
Are you talking about the horse and buggy days? The man held the reins because he was stronger in case something freaked the horse out and he took off across the fields.
The point is
that your car isn't going to take off and jump the stone walls and gallop across the pastures.
I don't want to discuss this anymore. I will drive. It's only 10 miles out to the restaurant. Nothing's going to happen.
No. I'm going to drive.
No.
Look here. I'm a good driver. I never had an accident, never even had a ticket of any kind. I bumped into the stone wall out here once, but I didn't even get a dent.
What's the boss going to think if you drive? What if he asks?
Why should he ask? He's not going to lean forward over the back seat and say to me, well, why are you driving?
That's another thing. Whenever we've been with them before, we men were in the front seat, and you two women were in the back.
Well, why don't we have a change? You two men will be in the back seat, and we two women will be up front. Is that such a horrible idea you can't even picture it?
You don't even seem to understand that this could all be very embarrassing to me.
You don't seem to understand that if you drive without a license, which is against the law, that's just the time something terrible will happen. We'll all get involved with the police. And if my driving embarrasses you, wait until you see your boss and his wife sitting in the county jail or in a hospital or in the morgue. Embarrassing would hardly be the word.
Well... Would you like to drive, sweetheart?
Yes, thank you, my love. Now, please tell me something. Where did you get this idea that it looks better if the man drives?
My father always drove the car. Always.
Well, it's because your mother couldn't drive and your father wouldn't teach her. Honey, if it makes you feel any better, it isn't just you. We've discussed this at Bridge Club, and 6 wives out of 8 said their husbands always grab the wheel. You're not alone. Now, you better get upstairs.
Right. I'll shower and shave, and we'll pick them up at 7, right?
Uh-huh, 7. Oh, wait a minute. Did your wallet have all your credit cards, too?
Yeah, of course.
Well?
Well, what?
Well, money. We're taking your boss out to dinner. We're going to need money. Do you have any?
Money? No, it was all in my wallet.
And your credit cards are gone. All I've got is about $3. How did you pay for the taxi?
I had a 5 in my pocket. Where's our emergency money?
You borrowed it last week. Well, let's not panic. I've got my Diners Club card.
Well, fine, great.
But you can't sign it.
Well, you can sign it.
I know. I just want to point out that not only will I be driving the car, but I'll also be the one who signs the check and pays for the dinner. And I just wondered, are you going to have a problem with that, Albert, dear?
This is not my day. Not my day.
A Private Life of Ethel and Albert was written by Peg Lynch. Esther Geddes McVeigh played Ethel. The part of Albert was played by David Van Meter. Tune in tomorrow for another chapter in the life of Ethel and Albert, brought to you each weekday at this time by the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
The Sammy Kay Showroom. Hello, everyone. This is Sammy Kay. Thank you, folks, and a great big welcome to Swing and Sway Time in our Chrysler Showroom. North, south, east, and west, we've got the tunes that you request.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, the bobbing along.
Three cadets come bob, bob, bobbing along.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy, what if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers, rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours, I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song, when the red, red robin comes bob, 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 bobbing along.
We present an extra special song in our showroom. So right now it spotlights music and Tony Alamo to sing the Chrysler's Song of the Week.
Well, sometimes, how many days until sometime? For my dreams make it clear that my lover is near, and she ought to be here about some time. Who is someone? Who this wonderful someone? Oh, I'm keeping my heartstrings in tune and hoping that sometime is soon.
The Song of Old Hawaii, as the cadets and the K choir choose an old favorite from the pages of our dusty manuscripts. little Laura Leslie went to school down Maryland Way, she wanted to be a secretary, not a singer. But I'm sure you'll be glad we persuaded her to forget all about shorthand when you hear her sing.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August. I'm as normal as blueberry pie. No more a smart little girl with no heart. I have found me a wonderful guy. I am in a conventional dither with a conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I speak of that wonderful guy. I'm as strident, as gay as a daisy, and may a cliche coming true. I'm bromidic and bright as a moon, happy night, pouring light on the dew. I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful night, pouring light on the dew. I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful
When I was a kid in knee pants in Rocky River, I never missed a Western movie. And I was crazy about cowboy songs, too. Still am. Especially this great new ballad sung by Don Cornell and the K Choir.
An old cowpokeman riding out one dark and windy day.
Oh.
Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way.
Oh.
When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a-plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw.
Oh.
Yippee-i-yay. Was still on fire and their hoofs was made of steel.
Oh.
Their horns was black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel.
Oh.
A bowl of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry.
Oh.
Yippee-i-yay. Faces gone, their eyes were blood and shirts all soaked with sweat.
Oh.
They're riding hard against that herd, but they ain't caught them yet.
Oh.
Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on heathen
ground.
Yippee-i-yay. Riders rode on by him, he heard one call his name.
Oh.
If you want to save your soul from hell, a riding on the rain.
Oh.
Then, cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride. I'm trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Oh,
yippee-i-yay,
yippee-i-yay,
yippee-i-yo, ghost herd in the sky.
Lollipop Lament.
Candy kisses wrapped in paper mean more to you than any of mine. Candy kisses wrapped in paper you'd rather have than any old time. You don't mean it when you whisper those sweet love words.
On the way back from the band's recent trip to Buffalo, Tony Alamo added to the normal confusion of our Pullman by rehearsing a number from the new Irving Berlin musical, Miss Liberty. I'd like him to show you now the way he was singing it along all about Schenectady at 2 o'clock in the morning. All right, Tony?
I love you, I love you. There's no other way. Just one way to say I love you. I love you. I love you. And try as I may, that's all I can say. I love you much more. Could be said if I thought with my head, but I only can think with my heart. I love you, I love you, and yearn for the day when you.
That's all I've got time for today. Please check out our website, www.americanradiotheater.org, and have a listen to some of our podcasts. You know, we put up a new one every month. for 12 hours of old-time radio listening. Stop by radiooutofthepast.org for their next marathon,